Hi, welcome to our podcast, Where Next? Travel with Kristen and Carol. We are two moms with a passion to travel.
Each episode, we interview people around the globe to explore where to go next. Today, we're interviewing Iya Afan from Singapore. She's an American, moved to Singapore for work last year.
Yep. Wonderful. Thank you for having me, ladies.
Thank you for joining. You've got this amazing, when you were working here, got an amazing opportunity with your company to relocate to Singapore. And in terms of just curious, how, you know, the research, I'm assuming there was some, and then deciding to make the move and then the actual move and then the transition and how all that's happened along with COVID. On top of that, and definitely want to touch upon what you were talking about in your text to me about it's closing down again, which is very interesting. So
I've got stories for days. I don't think we have enough time for this all at once, but we'll break it down into whatever viewers want to hear.
Sounds good.
So I guess I'll start with a little background. So let's see. You know, I moved from San Francisco in January 2020, and I had been, you know, working in the Bay Area for the better part of, what, maybe 13, 14 years. And the company that I work for, LinkedIn, there was an incredible opportunity that I just couldn't refuse that cropped up. I want to say it was around maybe the October 2019 timeframe. I had been with the company at that point for about 3 years, and this would be a huge step up in my career to go from, you know, an individual contributor as part of the sales team to managing a regional team for APAC, Asia Pacific. So I now oversee a team of 9 junior salespeople that manage our customer relationships in Australia, New Zealand, and parts of Southeast Asia. So it's been incredible and so memorable and a little crazy to relocate right before the pandemic hit. And what's also really interesting, Kristen, you and I have talked about this a little bit, is that I feel like I'm in a time warp because, you know, when I moved here, it was just as things were starting to heat up and masks were becoming mandatory and work from home was mandated. And so I'd talk to my friends back home in California and they'd say, oh, wow, that seems like it's kind of, I don't know. I hope everything's okay. I hope you're safe over there. I'm like, just be mindful that this could make its way into the US. In fact, I think it already has. And so it was very downplayed. And then Singapore, it's a whole other topic, which we can get into if you'd like, but just the way that Singapore has managed the pandemic and really contained everything here. Again, is in my first, two, 3 months of living in a new country for the first time as an adult. It was really just interesting to see how the government handled it and what that looks like for me trying to form like a social circle during lockdown, managing a team remotely that I had just inherited, building all that trust and rapport over Zoom calls round the clock has just been really interesting. And then there's been a gradual, of course, like loosening up of the restrictions, me kind of coming out of hibernation, getting to know the country. And then now, unfortunately, as of Sunday of last week, so it hasn't even been a full week that we're back into lockdown. So I can fill you in on all kinds of stories in between, but that's the general gist.
Absolutely. And what's the primary language of Singapore?
It's English. So primarily English. And then the other most commonly used languages would be Chinese, Mandarin, and several of the dialects from India, as well as Malaysian.
Yes. Okay. And so your team and everyone that you work with is all, they're all English speaking and they learn English.
Yes.
And it's all,
yes. Okay. So they're all English speaking. However, it's a very diverse group of individuals. So some of my immediate team members are locally from Singapore, Malaysia, got a few from New Zealand, Korea, Japan. I think that's my portion. And then we've got the whole extended team, which is from all around as well.
Wow. Okay.
So how do you get any work done? Because I'm just thinking, like, I'd be so like, I would assume you're adventurous and you're probably like, oh my gosh, people from so many different countries, New Zealand, you know, do you find yourself like asking them all a zillion questions all the time, or are you disciplined?
Well, I'm sure it's Carol,
it's actually very counterintuitive. Do I get any work done? I feel like I'm now to the opposite extreme. I've never worked harder in my life. And I have to like tap myself, and I don't know if, you know, Kristen's the expert here, but I have to tell myself to slow down and just say, actually, wait, close everything up, close the laptop and just chill, because the work ethic in Singapore is nothing like I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone, and that's coming from San Francisco and the Silicon Valley.
Coming from San Francisco, I would assume the only other comparable place, which I still haven't been to, which is on my list to visit when I can, is Hong Kong. But it's just very, you know, just the work ethic. People are just so driven and hungry and motivated. And that was one of the first things I noticed. And so when I'm managing a junior team of individuals, they'll follow exactly what the leader does. And so, again, I have to check myself and just make sure no emails are going out or Teams messages are going out past prime time. Otherwise, they will respond. And there's almost this expectation that they need to mirror my working hours. So, but yeah, as far as questions are concerned, I mean, of course, questions all around. Conducting business internationally is a whole other, you know, world to me. Working in different currencies, so Australian dollars, Singapore dollars, thankfully, because LinkedIn is a U.S. company. That is the, we've kept it consistent with, you know, bringing all of our forecasts and all of our bookings in USD. But I don't know, the metric system. So each time, so I'm a long distance runner. So another subtopic is when people ask me, oh, how many kilometers did you run? Yeah. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I have to pull out a converter for that.
Miles. I've got it. Kilometers. Right. Exactly. I can only imagine. Oh my gosh. So, Carol, and Ian and I have fond running stories, and we also did the Oakland half marathon together.
Oh, wow.
Meeting together. Well, we were both there, and then I couldn't find her. And so then it went off, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to run. I'll see y'all.
Oh, right.
But it was
fun. My gosh. When is the last time you did a race, Kristen?
Well, I switched to triathlons. So I've been doing that. And then, I mean, I did the half Ironman in 2017. And then that's actually, I think, because then I got pretty heavy into competing in wake surfing. So, but for months, well, actually every month I do my own Olympic distance triathlon until the COVID stuff. And then I still do it. But I swim twice a week for a mile. And then I bike a couple times a week, and then I run, you know, four times a week or something. So I still
do it. That's great. That's so great to hear that. Yeah. You've disciplined yourself to still do the distance without, having races on the calendar. I'm the same way with half marathons right now. My goal when I first moved to Singapore, because of the weather, that's another topic and adjustment for me, it's so hot. I will still say it in Fahrenheit because I don't know what it is in Celsius. Yes. But
I don't either.
It was helpful for you too, right?
Yeah.
It's the same temperature year round.
Yeah.
And it's probably anywhere from 88 to 93 degrees all year round, every day. The only other change in temperature is when we get torrential, you know, downpours, just tropical rains, and it will come down so hard for maybe 15 minutes and then it's the sun is out.
Oh my! Oh, wow. So what about mornings? Do you like, if you know, I'd probably run like really early morning because that's got to be the coolest, right? And then it's still 80
or late at night. Yeah. So in the morning, I mean, I'm not as much of a morning person now as I used to be back in the US because people are generally up late here. That's another, you know, cultural piece. So ideally, you want to get out at like 6 a.m. and get your run, if you're doing a long run, done by like 8, because I'll go out for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
Or For me, like, I don't know, to me, it's on the late side, but I'll see people out running at like 10 p.m. because that's when it actually gets cool. And, you know, safety is a whole other, a whole other consideration. It's so, I mean, it's not no crime, but it's very much, you know, low crime. It's, you can be out walking around, and you feel safe.
Are there police that are making sure that it's safe all the time? So like if you're running at night by yourself, you know, mm-hmm. there's like security guards or in the streets that, you know, they're looking out for you and there will be no trouble.
So I don't see them out and about that often, especially not at nighttime. It's more of just understood what the punishments would be if you were to bother someone or make someone feel uncomfortable or unsafe. So those things, those measures are put in place way ahead of time. So that way, as a society, it's just understood. Like,
isn't there I think there's a Saturday Night Live skit on the punishment in Singapore or some sort of something. And that's why I just started laughing, because I think it was even on like airplanes or something, like you touch someone, you're going to be lashed or like, it's pretty, like what's the punishment?
I don't know. So one of the first, decorative pieces of art I got for my first apartment, because I've moved since, but I just thought it was cute. It just says, you know, Singapore, a fine city. And I didn't realize that when it arrived, there's fine print in there, and it actually gives you all of the fines for the violations. So that's the joke, right? Singapore is a fine city because you're fined for, it's as literal as throwing a piece of chewing gum on the ground.
Yes.
That one before.
But it's to that level. I don't know what the fine is for, you know, if you were to kind of like not attack someone, but just if you were to bother someone, like what that would be. But it's just the threat of being jailed immediately or having those fines. And so another layer to all of this is living in the time of COVID and the fines and the punishment that happens if you violate that, which is why, again, I think we've been able to successfully keep our case numbers down for so long, but for this recent resurgence.
Do you know what's the research? I haven't paid attention to the news as much as I know. India was bad, but what was the...
The long and the short of it is there is a new strain of the coronavirus, which is rampant in India right now.
Yes.
Very, very sad, very unfortunate. And because there is some travel happening to like in and out of Singapore, it's still very restricted, but the few folks that make it in, just unfortunately... it was caught, I believe, from a few airport employees, so immigration officers, some of the staff, and they are asymptomatic. Mm. So they're carrying it, they're spreading it. It wasn't detected until recently. And so now we've got a few different clusters that are forming. And again, it's all relative, right? So when you think, I don't know, the numbers that you're imagining as far as how bad it is here, but our local number of community cases. Okay. So in a country of about 6 million people, so that's locals and expats, what's your guess as to the number of cases that we've seen that have put us back into a lockdown?
Right.
Per day?
I was going to say 1,000 per day is California, and we got locked down and it was pretty bad. Or wasn't it that? No, not, that was deaths actually a day. Yeah. So I think it was like 50.
So like new cases at a time in an island of 6 million people. What do you think is like that trigger where it's like, no, this is too many. We got to shut down businesses.
Well, yeah, and it's also Singapore. So maybe it's not very many.
Yeah. Right.
So like 1,000?
300?
Our case count right now is 41. So it's all relative.
And that caused a lockdown in the whole country. Yeah, that's what we do, like, just for, like, our county. Oh, 3 new cases, this, you know, the county or something, which made it out. But the whole state, our state only has 4 million. So, yeah, sick. Wow. Okay, that's so they're like, we're nipping it in the bud.
That's exactly what it is. And so that's just been surreal. And, you know, I mean, it's been surreal to just be not from the country that I'm living in now, watching how things unfold. And
yeah,
I feel my if this makes sense, my Americanness more now than ever, which is just that like hunger for freedom and just to do my own thing and just this unbridled, like I feel like a caged bird, but at the same time, I'm in probably, knock on wood, one of the safest places that I could be, you know, for me to have left the country when I did. So yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. And so just for now, this, I guess, second lockdown is looking to last for about a month. It's not as strict as, so the first true lockdown that we had in 2020, they called it the circuit breaker. So just the concept of like cutting off the flow of just the virus spreading. And so that lasted for about 2.5 months. And it was as strict as the only thing that you could go do outside of your home was go to the grocery and exercise. And you could do it without a mask as long as it was like a heavy breathing type of exercise, which is why running was like my saving grace, because that was my way to see the island, to see all these incredible places. So I don't know if you I could pull up some photos later, but just there were so many photos that I posted in 2020 that looked like it was just me. There were no people, because that was my way of seeing the country.
Beautiful.
That's just it. I mean, it's a beautiful place to be. I just feel like I'm getting a bit of a delayed start as I go. So it's been interesting.
So how was, it's so interesting and to share, I know California, we've been locked down for so long. Both my kids still aren't at school. It's been over a year. They're not going to go until next year.
It just never went back to school. Everything's still done from home.
A lot of schools are back. My eighth grader, it's a Montessori school. They were allowing 2 days a week for 2.5 hours, and I missed the timing, I guess. And so he wasn't allowed. And then my daughter had the choice. And so there are people that decided to go, and she's in, you know, 11th grade. And she was like, Mom, I'm fine at home. And then she was training so much for synchronized swimming. You know, it's 3 to 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. So she's like, I just would rather, and she has a lot of AP classes. So she's like, I just want to power through this and then go to practice and get home. And it's interesting because, you know, she did very well. She had like a 4.3 before COVID, and then it dipped to like a 3.8, and then she got mad, and now it's back up to a 4.2. She figured it out, and, you know, wow. So she's great. So, and we have a lot of fun at home. I mean, I'm working hard, she's working hard, and then we giggle in between. We were just laughing at a Keenan Peele video right before this as I was finishing up in the kitchen. So it's worked out really well. And yeah, I'm going to miss them next year, but you know, it's fine.
It's trade-offs, right? Like on the one hand, we're all just like living in this state of like uncertainty and this is so weird, but then the blessings kind of come out of different, you know, unexpected places, like quality time that you're spending with family that you otherwise wouldn't have had if they were home.
Yes.
I've had more conversations with my parents who we're now based in the same time zone for the first time in 7 years. And again, I was hoping to get on a plane to visit them as soon as I arrived, but I've not been able to leave the country since then. But the other side to it is, because I'm home all the time, the fact that I could call them after a rough day at work, or, you know, every other day, we just have conversations. They're so involved in my life, and I'm with, you know, and I with them. So that's just been really, really nice. And
no, absolutely. Absolutely.
So awesome. So I have a question about Singapore. So it says it's like a city nation state. Is it actually its own country and a city? So it's so tiny, part of Malaysia, but there's 6 million just in Singapore. I'm just looking at the map. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's an island, a country, a city, and a state all of its own. There are no, like when you, so Kristen has sent me mail. There's no like city that you write Singapore. And then
That's right. I forgot about that.
Okay. That's so interesting. Okay. And then, so the government seems, you know, kind of strict. So, but if everyone is, you know, you think of America, capitalism was what drives everyone. But as a capitalist, I would not, or democratic, no. Or you don't really, does it have a, I mean, does it have a label?
I mean, there are labels. My understanding is that it has the feel of it being democratic, but at the end of the day, it's more, you know, there's a prime minister. It is a lot more, I don't know what the right word would be. It's definitely not dictatorial, right? It's not so extreme like it would be in like a communist nation.
Yeah.
But it is, let's just say it is authoritative, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, but it just works. It works for the society. Like the local population is a very compliant population, which I've found works extremely well in a pandemic. But again, there are some interesting nuances, and actually it's good that this has been a long awaited, chat for us to schedule, but it's given me more funny little stories to be able to share where, when you see kind of the fusion of the expat community trying to find their grounding, and I'm included in that, right? In this society, it's just very interesting. So culturally speaking, the Singaporeans have a shorthand way of saying can or cannot. So for example, you know, if I ask someone, you know, can I get together with a group of more than two people right now during the current lockdown? Instead of just saying, oh, yes, you can, or no, you cannot, it's just can or cannot. It's just very black or white. And it's not just a way of saying it, but it's just a whole way of approaching rules and regulations and things that can or cannot be done or allowed. And so one of the stories that comes to mind is, so as much as I talk about the current state, which is, you know, lockdown and just the delayed start that I had last year, I've been so fortunate to have so many memories in between once the restrictions did loosen up. And there was a time for a good part of the past year where it felt as close to normal as it could, right? The main restrictions were that you'd have to wear a mask everywhere you went, except for if you're eating or exercising. And you had to be, you were restricted to groups of either five for pretty much all of last year, or it increased to eight from January until last week. And then they had to kind of bring it down to five, and now we're back to two. But you'll see, I mean, I have all these amazing photos of just new friends and new people that I've met. And, you know, Singapore's been great about gradually opening up different, you know, like attractions, even though you can't have any visitors or tourism right now. Just the amount of things that you could do on the island was a big deal. And so one of the vacation, you know, excuse me, it things to do is the cruise to nowhere. Have you guys heard about this?
No, so I'm dying to hear.
To nowhere, but cruises to nowhere. So I believe there are two main cruise lines here. So Royal Caribbean, and I believe it's like Dream Cruises.
Yeah.
And normally it's supposed to go all around, around Malaysia and into Malaysia and parts of Southeast Asia. But you know, you can't stop anywhere. But the cruises would still bring on a certain capacity. They'd have the meals, so it really is a cruise. And then you go around for a few days, you never stop anywhere, and then you come right back. So I feel like every third person I'd talk to, like mainly from the expat community, would just be like, oh, you know, yeah, I'm busy, I can't see you next weekend because I'm going on the cruise to nowhere. So I haven't gone yet, but the stories I've heard. And so friend of mine, I just asked, I was like, so tell me all about it. And so this is one of those funny rules of, you know, it's cannot, but then how do you work around it? Is, you know, how on cruises there's different, you know, entertainment. So whether it's like an ABBA cover band or it's like a Thunder Down Under equivalent, right? So you've got these entertaining shows, but the rule on the cruises in Singapore is, if you're in this huge auditorium, which of course is not fully at capacity, right? They have to manage the crowds, the crowd size. But as a audience member, you cannot sing or dance.
Oh,
you just have to be in your mask, mute, while these performers are performing. So I just think that's so funny because if you're listening, exactly. And I would think as a performer, you thrive on that, right? You build off of the energy of the crowd, and
then they're just like,
and you, I just think that that's so funny. And so we were laughing at just some of those stories. And unfortunately now all the cruise ships are docked and they can't go anywhere. So again, we're just kind of making the most of what we have. And, when you see now, because the rule is groups of two, right? So you're seeing as many pairs as possible out.
Okay.
That's what we can do.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's pretty funny. I couldn't imagine being, well, it seemed like the cruise ship would just be like sort of a breeding ground for,
super spreader.
Yeah. Just to spread and I didn't realize, even if you don't get off, just being on a cruise ship with everyone and just the air ventilation or whatever, it seemed like
Well, a big part of what Singapore has done really well is contact tracing. Since I haven't been in the US for a year, I'd be curious to know for you two, what your perception or experience has been in the US with contact tracing.
I'll start. So when I got my first COVID test, well, before that, the city said like sign up in with an app and we'll let you know if you've been exposed. Yeah. I never got a single notification. So I'm assuming hardly anyone signed up for it. And then when I signed up, when I got my first shot, there was an app that, you're supposed to let them know if you have any symptoms and they're going to let you know like ongoing side effects. Like nothing, no communication. So I'm like, I don't think anyone's using this thing. So that's my experience.
Right. And that's a perfect example of it's only as good as one, how it's communicated to the masses, to the public by the government, and two, how compliant the public is. And so as far back as I'll say March 2020, so well over a year now, the QR codes, familiar? I mean, they're everywhere here in Singapore and around Asia, but the QR codes have been vital to contact tracing. And so, and I think just that's another topic too, around the, digitalization of some of these businesses to where you won't last as a mom and pop shop if you have like a notebook and you have to have people sign in with their phone number and all of that. You need to have that QR code because it's easy enough for everyone with a smartphone to basically entry upon any business once they opened up last year was temperature check and you check in with that QR code. And then you leave, you check out. And so, again, it takes a lot of trust in the government to give that kind of information with your whereabouts all the time. And in many societies, it's not going to fly, but here it worked. And so you have a sense of, yes, you're being monitored, but at the same time, you know you're safe because the government will notify you if you've been exposed to a cluster of people. And so the fact that it's been going on for so long, it's just now a part of how we operate. So you do not go in and out of a place unless you've scanned in and out. And so with that, for things like the cruises, of course, you've had to have had a COVID test, tested negative. And then I don't believe that there's another test once you get back. But again, because the contact tracing goes hand in hand with the testing, it's just more under control.
Yeah.
Okay. And then off the topic of COVID, but just generally like cost of living, Singapore, I think people think it's very expensive. Do you see like expats that are freelance writers in America, like going to live there and afford it? Or is it mainly people that are part of corporations and are just transplanted there, as the international business people?
Well, cost of living, it really is a range. So for me personally, having moved from San Francisco proper, it was not as much of a sticker shock, but that's not most people, right?
Was it higher than San Francisco or about the same?
About the same.
Okay.
It's about the same. Again, I'll speak to my personal experience and then I'll share a little bit more outside of that. But the other piece is that the taxes that you pay, income taxes, are lower here. Which is why for many, it's an attractive place for expats to come to because of the income tax. Now, the caveat is if you're American, you pay taxes in both countries, no matter what, no matter. And that's just being an American. So I'm like anxiously awaiting that. I've already paid my US taxes, but I'm awaiting the time that I have to pay the Singapore taxes because you just can't avoid it, unfortunately. But speaking for every, like the other expats that I've met, non-US, you know, they seem to be, it seems to be comparable with where they've come from. So again, I haven't met a whole lot of people just yet, but a good number of my acquaintances are from the UK, from Australia, you know, other expats who have already gone through sort of their expat tour of living in Hong Kong for, you know, 5 to 10 years. And now they've moved to Singapore, or they had previously lived in Beijing or Shanghai, which is really cool to hear their stories. But again, going back to the cost of living, it's interesting because, you know, I have met expats who are English teachers, you know, who, you know, the income is not that high, but it's affordable to live here. So again, there are the parts of the country, don't get me wrong, that are very like exorbitantly high to live. And, you know, it works because there's clearly a demographic that will pay. But you know, there are pockets of the country that are absolutely affordable too. The interesting part for locals, is around what they call, it's basically an initiative for local citizens, as well as permanent residents, to have affordable housing. So it's, HDB is the acronym. So Housing Development Board. So I wish I could show you. I'll see if I can send you guys photos afterwards. But if you look around the city, you'll see skyscrapers and, you know, just the really nice like luxury condos. And then in pockets of the city as well, everywhere, you'll see what they call HDB housing. And these are like fixed. It's almost, I guess, the equivalent of like rent controlled. Mm-hmm. And I don't know all the deeper details around this, but it's worth looking into just to learn a little bit more about it. But my understanding is that as long as you are a citizen or have your permanent residence, you're eligible for this type of housing. It's public housing, but it's so well maintained, and each one has, you know, a specific set of like shops and local, you know, like restaurants and amenities with HDB. And then, it's really interesting. And then you're encouraged as a local Singaporean to live. This is another social piece that interlocks with the housing, is you're encouraged to live with your family until you get married or until you turn 35. And that's the age that you can then be eligible for an HDB flat.
Wow.
Okay. So dating is a whole nother topic, which we'll get to maybe on another call. When you talk to locals that live with their family, if they're right around like that age range, age demographic.
Wow. There's not arranged marriages and things like that in Singapore or anything.
Not formally that I've seen. Carol, I know I kind of went in a few different directions there. Did that answer your question?
That's good. And so listeners that haven't been in San Francisco, and I haven't been there for a while, I used to live out there. But so for let's say compared to like we lived in kind of in between the Mission and the Castro, Guerrero Street, you know, so an apartment there, 2-bedroom was going for like $2,500. That was like 15 years ago. So I'd imagine, I think I've looked now, so like $3,000.
Yeah.
Or like a, you know, a decent neighborhood, not like the best, not the worst. So is that, would it be comparable? Like $3,000 for a small 2-bedroom?
It's comparable. Let me just do a quick conversion, because again, I'm thinking in Singapore dollars now.
Ooh, look at that.
So let's see here. So I lucked out. So I moved into a new apartment in February, especially after realizing, you know, I intentionally picked a small apartment last year, assuming that I'd be traveling all the time and not really at home, when it ended up being the complete opposite. I've never spent more time in an apartment than the one I was in last year, and it was tiny. Yeah. And so I had this opportunity to, you know, just wrap up that lease. And by the way, you have to give 2 months notice that you're not renewing. So it's weird because you basically have, you know, it's really just a game of timing. You have to like get in, make sure that the landlord is willing to hold the apartment for you and everything. So normally it would be very competitive and aggressive to try and get a good place. Mm-hmm. But I benefited from the fact that a lot of expats have left Singapore in the past year, and I got a really good deal on a unit in a beautiful, you know, neighborhood, which is considered, you know, central business district. So I could walk to work if I wanted to, although I'd be sweating if I did. But it also has like a local feel around it. So, you know, just shop houses and just a great area. And so I'm paying for a 2-bedroom, 2-bath, and it's actually a loft style, which I'm really happy about and feel so, again, lucked out, because just having that sense of working from home, the separateness of work and home. So yeah, I'm paying in USD around $3,000 a month on rent, but it normally would have been probably another $1,000 more. I just got a really good deal. So I would say I might be paying around the same as San Francisco prices right now, but the size and the location, I'm really like, it's a bit more of a steal for me, I think, specific to this year.
Oh.
And I was able to get it for a 2-year lease.
Nice.
And then what about going out to eat? Is that comparable to San Francisco or more expensive, or is food inexpensive there?
It is. Oh, again, I have to think, because again, I'm thinking in SGD. It's about the same. The biggest difference is that alcohol prices are double.
Oh, okay.
So really? That glass of wine kills me every time, having moved from, you know, wine country. I lived in Pleasanton for so long. So I used to go to Safeway and just get a bottle of wine for, I don't know. Remind me, Kristen, how much is like a decent bottle of wine at Safeway?
Like $12.
20 to 30 at most. And that's a decent one. You can get them for 10. You can get a good one for 10 or 15.
Okay. So when I see, oh my gosh, when I see, let's say like, no knock against it, but like a Behringer wine.
Yes.
It's totally imported. Exciting. So it's imported. And they're probably at the store for maybe 30, 35 SG. So yeah, I mean, and that's just, again, going to the store. So when you're in the, you know, when you're at restaurants, the markup is even higher. So,
oh my gosh.
And so at first I thought in the beginning, like, oh yeah, I can get around this and, you know, find the tricks of the trade, but no, it's like, it's flat. And it's because the alcohol is taxed much higher. Yeah. I think, again, one of the quirky things about Singapore is that they call it jokingly the sin tax. All of the sins are taxed higher. So alcohol, cigarettes, gambling. Yeah. So that would be a big difference. But on the topic of going out to eat, Singapore really is a big foodie culture. And I didn't really consider myself too much of a foodie, but it is now that I'm getting more familiar when the restaurants are open. There's just such a variety of different food and very like experimental types of fusion, just because of how diverse it is here. So you can go really high end and go all out in the most like affluent parts of like Marina Bay and these high rise, you know, really nice hotels, or you could go to these, what they call hawker stalls. So like food centers where there's really nothing like it, but if I could make a very loose comparison, if you could, you know, picture going to like food trucks and like off the grid. So instead of them being like little trucks where you can just like walk up and get, you know, some street food and then go to a communal table and meet new people that way, it's just one big like food hall where, yeah, you pay cash, or there's just a way now to basically like scan and pay electronically, which is great during a time like this. Not, you know. So, but yeah, just trying the local food. And again, it's just such a mix between like Malaysian, Indonesian, Thai food, local Singaporean food, which is, again, it's a mixture of everything. And you could probably expect to pay like $4 a plate and just get a bunch of different things. So you can find ways to, you know, work with, you know, just, you know, live in Singapore on a budget, basically.
I was going to say, what's the like their popular best tasting like food that you like or that's really popular in Singapore?
So most of the food for me, because I do have a Western palate, you know, I'm a meat and potatoes kind of guy. Yeah. I love my pasta. So it's hard to, I really have to get someone adventurous to get me out of my comfort zone and take me to some of these places. To get out of my comfort zone. Otherwise I'm just going to go straight for like the burger or the Italian or the Japanese food, which I love.
Yeah.
But local food. So I'll always gravitate towards, like the noodles dishes. So like stir fry, you know, usually like vegetable based, like stir fry dishes. I'm starting to get more into stingray.
Pretty exotic.
Yeah. So like a grilled stingray, and it'll usually come with like a really spicy kind of fiery, just sauce, like hot sauce on top. Yeah, combining that with the noodles is really good.
What's the texture of stingray?
So when I've had it grilled, picture it as if you were about to just eat like a grilled fish.
Okay.
What I like about it though is that it's not fishy, if that makes sense. You know,
I think of it like calamari, but is anything like that? That texture?
No, not at all. It's more, it's not like chewy. It's more, I guess it would remind you of maybe like a milk fish of sorts. So it's like a white fish meat, but it doesn't have like a fishy.
Like tilapia maybe?
Yeah. Similar, but I guess less flaky.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of acquiring that. And then the different satays. So basically barbecue, it could be chicken, pork, or beef. And oh my gosh, there's this great place, which again is closed, unfortunately, right now. But when it opens up, this is like my mouth waters thinking about it. So like if it were a Friday night, it'd be so fun to just get some girlfriends and go to Satay Street, where they close off the kind of just main area, being road, which is in the central business district. So it kind of calms down anywhere, and there aren't a whole lot of cars that pass through there. But yeah, like after work, you'd kind of just go and you'd wait because, so another part of the culture here is, so getting in line, but they say queuing up. So I'm getting used to saying the terminology now, where the longer the queue, the more in demand and the more people want to stand in line, which is, I don't know, for me, it's not really a thing, especially when it's like 90 degrees out, but
yeah, totally.
That's the feel of it. You go to wait, and then there'll be people, they call them uncles. Everyone's an uncle. So the uncle will wave you down and just say, you know, you have an open spot for two or three. You sit down and you have all these vendors. They come up to you with their laminated menus and they're all just like photos, and you just kind of like pick and choose. And again, we're talking like maybe $4 to $7 a plate. And these satay, you know, barbecue on skewers, they've just been grilling and like they've been marinating all day, and they basically like grill it. Yeah, my mouth is watering thinking about it. They bring it to your table, get your noodles and everything. And then the best part is the cold pitchers of beer that you can just order with it. So it's just this like feast of just, and you know, and so even though it's hot, you know, you just kind of tie up your hair and, you know, it's humid, but then you've got the cold beer to just kind of keep it refreshing. So it's been really fun to just have that as like a little bit of an adventure. But I'd say bring it back to full circle to what Kristen asked around like the other popular foods. One of them is chili crab, which I've had other forms of locally prepared Singaporean crab, but chili crab is like the famous dish. Oh. And it's like a chili sauce with the crab.
So it's really spicy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really spicy. And the concept is a lot of like sauce. And so if you have like almost like little mini like buns of bread. You're supposed to kind of like dip it in this like red chili sauce and then have it with the crab. So that's chili crab. And then the other one, which I've tried variations of it, which is very popular. Not too much my cup of tea, is laksa, L-A-K-S-A. And it's like a seafoody, fishy type of soup with noodles and seafood. So you have to remember that because of where Singapore is located, it's just this island, and it's actually it's the origins of the name Singapore have to do with it having been like a former like fishing village. So seafood is everywhere you turn, and it's again prepared in more of that Eastern style of cooking versus Western, but fish and seafood for days here.
It sounds like Chiapino, right? Is like Chiapino is like a whole bunch of different stuff, or is it?
Yeah, it is. It's very similar, except not cold, because Chiapino is cold usually, isn't it?
I thought it was hot too.
Maybe it's both, but very similar. So you'll find like calamari and scallops and like cockles are another thing that they come in these shells. And so it's just, it's like fish type of like stews.
Yeah.
And you use some spice and heat to it.
And I was going to say, is most of their food spite on the spicier side? Is that typical?
Usually, yes. Okay. And then there's this version of spice, which I've never tried until I got here. They call it mala, M-A-L-A. Uh-huh. It's a very fiery, like, I mean, it's a fiery type of spice.
Yeah.
You know, versus like a zesty or a vinegary type. It's just, I've never tried anything like it before. To me, it's acquired. There's a lot of Michelin star restaurants in throughout Singapore as well. Again, don't have to be too high end. There are hawker stalls that have actually received Michelin stars because these are just family recipes that have just, you know, just lasted over the years. And so I had tried this Michelin star, like mala tofu. Yeah. So it's kind of like a softer tofu with that heat to it. Mm-hmm. And it's just so hot that, you know, like you have to have it with some rice on the side. So,
yeah. Well, I was also curious about like places to go, like if I were to go over there, you know, and I love hiking and the beaches and the outdoors and or whichever. And maybe some people listening would be interested in shopping and sightseeing and, you know, what would you suggest, what places where to go that you would suggest? What have you liked?
So as far as outdoors, there are beautiful parks throughout the island. And what Singapore has done an amazing job with is marrying just the natural greenery and beauty of the island with the fact that it's extremely developed, very modern. Again, with you can in one day absolutely be in the city, do your luxury shopping in Marina Bay, and then later in the afternoon or after sunset, go to a nature reserve or a park and just sit and be around the greenery. So McRitchie Reservoir is one of the areas where you can just, it's actually very common, popular among the expat community, where it's like right now, it's going to be hot right at this point, but it's one of those things you get up early on a Saturday or Sunday morning, maybe around, not that early, just maybe like 7:30, go to McRitchie. You can hike the whole loop. It's, you know, it just goes in a circle and, you know, there's water all around. Sometimes you might even see almost like little like serpents in the water. I'm like, is that a Komodo dragon? I don't know. It's kind of just the exotic like trees and animals. You'll see monkeys in the trees. Don't feed them because they get really aggressive. You can probably do McRitchie probably a 3-hour hike if you wanted to, or you could, you know, cut it down to like an hour and just do part of the loop. So that's a popular one. Also with outdoors, there's this small island called Pulau Ubin, where you can just get on a ferry. So again, because it's part of Singapore, this has been really nice to be able to quote unquote island hop, you know, without having to deal with like passports and travel to another country. And again, it's just a day trip. There are no hotels or any, there aren't any hotels that you can like stay at, but you get on a quick ferry, rent a bike, like a mountain bike, mm-hmm. and just do a whole like 10K or 6 mile, you know, loop around the island. So those are some of the more outdoorsy things. One thing that's very actually, Kristen, you would love it, is wake surfing and wakeboarding is so popular here. I still haven't done
really?
It. Every other weekend I'm invited, or I'm seeing people on their Instagram stories, like wake surfing and wakeboarding.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So come. you would be completely at home here. So that's just a little taste of, oh, one last thing on the outdoors before I go into other like attractions.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't have been able to tell you this if we had scheduled this chat a few weeks ago, but I got talked into doing, they call it like, just, it's a walk, right? But it's it's the one end of the island to the other. So I walked the distance of one end of the country to the other.
That was going to be my question, because it looks like it could be the size of the San Francisco Peninsula or something.
It like sounds like Beta Breakers.
Like how?
Like Beta Breakers?
Yes, but it was a full marathon. That was the first time I've ever walked. Yeah. So we met at 6 a.m. at the top of Singapore, basically Sembawang Park, where if it were daylight, you could see Malaysia from it. So it was pitch black, so we saw nothing. So we got up and I had a huge water bottle with me, and then like there were planned stops. I have to hand it to this group who just invited me at the last minute. I knew what I was getting myself involved in, but they all had like their backpacks. They had umbrellas, cause you never know when it's going to rain. They had their like snacks and protein bars and like blister patches. I'm like, okay, I don't know what this is going to be, but if I need to, I could always abort mission and hop into a Grab, which is basically an Uber home if I need to. But again, running long distance, you know, let's just see what walking long distance is like. And it ended up being such a fun day, because there was a group of us that we were just, and these are mainly people, I'd known two of them, but the other two or three just met them for the first time. And that's how you make really good friends. Basically, you're just kind of teetering between the two groups, just talking all day. We went through all these like forests and trails and then like walking paths. And there was a direct walk from Sembawang Park all the way to Sentosa, which is another man-made island, which is again, where you'd go for like your beach clubs. And, you know, if you really wanted to go to the beach, Sentosa was the place to go. So the whole thing took us about 9 hours, and we had a reservation at one of the beach clubs. So after that, we had just kind of celebrated and had drinks by the beach after that. But the last hour, like lightning and thunderstorm, I was like, I don't know if we should be crossing any bridges right now. But at that point, we were just like committed. You know, we stood on the overhang for a little bit and then just like checked on. But yeah, I never thought I would. So that was about 26 miles. But then there's another one. So that was the north to south route. There's an east to west, which is I think like 30 miles. And I'm like, I only just need to do that the one time, but power to whoever wants to walk the country. Yes. And it's also very common for cyclists to do the loop around the whole island too.
Which is, do you know how many miles that is? 100?
Not offhand.
Because that's a common ride. They call it centuries. You know, they're pretty common.
Yeah, it might be 100 kilometers versus miles, but don't quote me on that. But it's definitely like a full day and a full undertaking. But again, that's been a very common thing for people to do, especially, you know, for those who can't travel and just want to see. That's the irony too. I think anyone who's lived here in Singapore, even locals, for as long as they have probably seen way more of Singapore because of this past year. Look, I could talk like all day long just about outdoor activities, but what was the other question on shopping?
That was
must-sees.
My interest, of course, I wanted to get, but just in general, like if there are other people who may like some outdoor activities, but more so would like kind of they're interested in other like shopping and like an art museum or something, whatever that may be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the tourist attractions, which are filled with tourists for good reason, right? So I would still absolutely recommend going, is Marina Bay. So if you've seen, you know, Crazy Rich Asians or any spotlight of Singapore, the Marina Bay Sands is the iconic hotel with the three towers and the infinity pool on top. Yeah. So It's, and a fun fact about the Marina Bay Sands, it's owned by the same company that owns the Las Vegas Sands, right? Oh. So, and the fun fact in all of this is that I believe within the last maybe 6 months or so, the Las Vegas Sands sold the Las Vegas Sands. So now that hotel in Vegas is going to be owned and operated by a different organization. And they want to invest more in Asia. So they're going to be adding on and building up this Marina Bay Sands here, as well as the one in Macau. So you'll expect to hear just more things about just this. It's like an incredible business, right? Because yeah. It's a hotel, it's a luxury hotel, it's a casino, it's shops, it's a convention center. So if ever I do feel, because I used to travel for Vegas pretty regularly for work, and so if ever I want to feel that sense of like, oh, I'm in, I don't know, a place of like affluence and, you know, high-end shops and all that, Marina Bay Sands is where I'll go. And just incredible views at the top there. And yeah. Then there's that whole bay where they have, I don't know, like boats that you can take on the bay. And there are just so many beautiful, just restaurants, and it's all very well lit. Again, I'll send you guys some photos if you want to take a look.
Yeah, sure.
And so, yeah. So, I mean, at sunset, the sun will just like reflect off of the mirrored windows of the hotel, and it's just gorgeous. So ideally you'd want to just get a dinner reservation at around sunset and just be around Marina Bay. And then behind Marina Bay are the gardens by the bay. So this is where the super trees are. So I've never seen anything like this before. They are, I don't even know how to describe it. They look like they're shaped like trees, but they're made of, I believe, like steel and just man-made materials.
Oh.
There's something having to do with like solar power where, I don't know, I can't even fully describe it. I can't do it justice. I'll send you more info on it, but just, they're really cool to see at nighttime because there's usually a light show that happens with these super trees. So again, if you've seen Crazy Rich Asians, it's the reception, the wedding reception at the end.
Yeah.
All took place at Gardens by the Bay. It's just incredible.
Yeah, so I had a question about that. When you mentioned those, I think, what did you call it? The food, kind of like, it's on like the food court kind of hawks.
Hawker.
Mm-hmm. Remember in the Crazy Rich Asians, when they first got there, they went to a place and they had the beers and it kind of looked like it was like a flea market or something. Is that kind of what that was
like?
That
is a hawker center. In fact, I went to that one that was in the movie for the first time last week when I knew that we were going to go into lockdown.
Because I remember they just like had all this food. They just kept bringing food of different kinds. Okay.
That is exactly hawker center. So, and it's spelled Hawker.
Okay.
If you want to look it up. So they have these hawker centers all throughout, all throughout the island. Some are smaller than others. And the idea again is that no air conditioning. It's meant to be just kind of like free flow air, but they're also very well maintained. Everything is so clean.
Yeah.
It's also an adjustment. I'm very spoiled now. It's going to be very difficult to live anywhere else and use like public restrooms because they are just spotless everywhere you go here. So again, so traveling here, you're in for a treat. The public transit system is so accessible and so efficient, whether you're taking the bus or the MRT, which is the underground train. It's great. So
do you have a car?
I do not. And to have a car in Singapore is extremely expensive. So back to cost of living. I just would plan to not really budget for a car because like, I guess again, the taxes you pay to purchase or to lease one, parking. So it's mainly to encourage using public transit and not congesting, you know, the streets with too many cars. And Grab, which is the Uber, and there's no Uber allowed anymore because Grab pretty much has taken on the market here. Grab and taxis still are very affordable. So, and I used to think for myself in the beginning, which again, balance, but I used to tell myself, no, I'm going to save as much money as I can on just using the MRT because it's so efficient. But or walk, right? Because I'm used to walking all throughout San Francisco. You get a good workout, but again, it gets so hot. that sometimes you just want to hop into a Grab or a taxi just for the air conditioning and some relief before you get to your next destination. It's become like a running joke now, especially as ladies, I think you can relate, where you get all done up, the makeup is on, you're feeling great, you're dressed up, you step outside and it is all melted off. I try to save money here and there. I'm like, if I'm going to a dinner, no, I have to be like in the AC.
Yeah.
Yes. And then of course on the way home, I can take the train home because it'll take, 15 minutes to get pretty much anywhere you want to go.
Oh, that's amazing. That is amazing. That's a fantastic book. I don't want to keep you on your Saturday and your weekend. I'm so grateful for, it's so much fun to see you again, of course. And just to learn more about Singapore. Oh my gosh. I definitely want to come and visit sometime. It'd be so fun.
This had to have been the fastest hour of my entire week.
I know.
I was honestly thinking it would be pretty like humdrum given the fact that we're in lockdown, but I so appreciate the questions that you both asked and, just kind of thinking about some of the memories I've had most recently. It just gives me that surge of energy versus feeling like, it just makes me realize, how much, of course, I enjoy getting out, shopping, eating, being out and about. And so there's still some things that I'll be able to do in this current lockdown situation, but it just makes me that much more excited to explore more once all of this lifts.
Well, it's the same on our side too.
It's so great because when we do these, like go on the maps, so I'm looking at the Super Tree Grove right now, and they are so huge. It's crazy. And then it looks like a bridge that you can walk from one to another, and they're just insane.
And like, I meant to mention as well, because you brought up museums, there are apparently about 50 museums throughout Singapore, and that's a combination of the Art and Science Museum, which looks like, so when you look at the skyline of Singapore in Marina Bay specifically, it looks like that, like a lotus flower. That's the Art and Science Museum. And then there's like the flower dome, which look like these little, again, it's just so modern looking. This is all within Marina Bay. And then the ones that I want to be able to check out, I believe they're open now, just limited capacity, but just, the Asian Civilization Museum. I'd love to learn more about just the history because Singapore used to be a part of Malaysia. And so just understanding what that looked like, how the government, handled just kind of the separation. And of course, just the relationship between Singaporeans and Malaysians is something that I'm fascinated by. So lots to see, definitely no shortage of shopping, for shopping, food, culture, it's a beautiful place to be. So I feel very fortunate to be here. And
well, congrats to you. That's sounds like a great career move. And that's awesome.
Thanks.
So great. That's so great.
Thank you so much, ladies, for the opportunity to share, and excited to hear more from your future episodes.
Yes. Absolutely. You'll see your mom too.
That's right. I'd love to hear. I mean, I hear about her adventures all the time, so it'll be interesting to hear her perspective in what she shared with you.
Oh, it was amazing. It was really eye-opening
it was kind of a tearjerker.
Almost tearjerker. Some of it was a tearjerker. It's like some of the more heavier topics we covered too that are going on over there, which was amazing.
It gives you so much perspective. And I think it's an experience that all Americans can and should have if you have the ability to just travel and see as much of this part of Asia. I mean, I had the good fortune to be able to go to the Philippines every Christmas for the last 30 plus years, but it's the only part of Southeast Asia that I'd ever seen. Mm-hmm. So to now be here and then to hopefully see other, countries within just the Southeast Asian vicinity will be, again, it just gives you that perspective and makes you really appreciate, what you have and what you're exposed to.
Exactly. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. Great to see you both. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and looking forward to connecting again soon.
Okay. Absolutely. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today. If you like the podcast, please rate, review, share, and subscribe to Where Next Podcast, or visit our site, wherenextpodcast.com.